Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75, 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
But you say, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he can fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Who was Jeremiah G. Hamilton? He first turns up in New York City in 1828 as a 20-year-old, running a cargo of counterfeit coin for a consortium of New York merchants down to Haiti, the Black Republic. They get caught down there, and Jeremiah Hamilton escapes. He's hidden by black fishermen around Port-au-Prince Harbor for a few days before he can get back on a New York-bound brig and get back to New York. And there was a considerable kerfuffle in the newspapers back in New York about this, because it was seen as undermining America's trade, because the North is trying to trade with Haiti. Freedom's Journal, the first black newspaper, hated Jeremiah Hamilton because he was undermining that black republic. He then probably moved to New York in the early 1830s, probably 1833, I think, and he struggles for a while trying to make ends meet, trying to get ahead. He's like everyone else in the dynamically growing metropolis of New York City at the time. He eventually does establish himself and get ahead, and he does it through, he has a close link with the insurance companies, the marine insurance companies. In fact, the marine insurance companies begin to found their own associations and talk to one another, in part because of Jeremiah Hamilton. What he specialized in was over-insuring boats and then sending them to the bottom of the ocean. and then claiming insurance on them. By 1836, all the marine insurance companies in New York City had come to an arrangement amongst themselves that no cargo or ship that had any link whatsoever to Jeremiah Hamilton would be insured by them. He still manages to get around that in quite complicated and very, very, very clever ways. By about 1835, 1836, he's established himself in New York City, and he does what every other tyro businessman does in New York City in 1836. In 1836, New York City and America actually is undergoing a real estate frenzy. Prices are just going skyrocketing everywhere. And for the only time in his business career, Hamilton follows the herd and jumps in and he buys real estate. He buys 47 lots of land over in Astoria, but he also buys up in Poughkeepsie. He buys several acres of land in Poughkeepsie, the township. He buys the Mansion House, which is perhaps the flashiest house in Poughkeepsie. He buys a 400-foot-long wharf with three buildings on it. So he's going long on real estate, and he buys about 3 or 4 weeks short of the top of the real estate market, and it's going to go bust. And he had borrowed money. Like, falling real estate prices and mortgages are an unholy combination, as we've seen repeatedly, actually, since then. What actually happened then is that Hamilton, for the next 5 years, is fending off creditors who are after him. He is one of thousands of New Yorkers who are on the verge of bankruptcy. He actually takes advantage of the new federal legislation that comes through in 1842, and it's a new bankruptcy law which is rather more forgiving of the bankrupted and is not so good for the creditors. I think it was the third day that the new law operates, Hamilton went in and declared himself bankrupt. The thing about Hamilton, he's black. He's a pioneer. He's the only black man doing this sort of stuff down in Wall Street. And if you think about the first black baseball player in the major leagues, the first black whatever, usually they have to appear in the most deferential fashion and they're sort of feeling their way because there's no one really to tell them how things operate. The thing that's really interesting about Hamilton is that he knows his way around. He knows his way around Wall Street in the most interesting fashion. So he declares himself bankrupt, but then his assets are sold. And he knows that they're sold. So his real estate that he had paid something like $35,000 for in 1836, and it's worth a lot less in 1842, he goes along to the bankrupt sale and he buys it back for $20. And again, this is an insider. There are a whole bunch of people who are buying up bankrupt stock because there's, you know, day after day of bankrupt people, all their chattels and holdings are being sold. And there are people organized amongst themselves to buy it. He goes in, clearly talks to these people, makes sure no one drives the price up, and buys it back, as I said, for $20. He then hits the stock exchange in a big way. Now, he's been buying and selling shares in the 1830s, but his second fortune is on the back of working in the stock exchange, of buying and selling shares. And again, if you're a black man buying and selling shares, dealing with basically a lily white world, you have to be sharper and quicker than everyone else. If you hit Hamilton, he hit you back and added 10% for interest. He is not a backward a backward-stepping individual. In 1845, the second board of the stock exchange here passes a resolution that anyone who buys or sells shares from Jeremiah Hamilton will be expelled from the stock exchange. And again, the two institutions, the insurance company and the stock exchange, both put, to coin a phrase, a black ban on Jeremiah Hamilton. It can hardly be coincidence that he is black. So there's discrimination. It's not a level playing field. On the other hand, for the most part, the white businessmen are more interested in the colour of his money than the colour of his skin. He is innovative as well in the way he deals on the stock exchange. So he forms what is called a pool, which is a very simple version of a hedge fund, in which people put in money, and then he is in charge of that money and uses it as leverage to borrow more money and then takes an aggressive position in the market. So what you have is prominent white New Yorkers trusting the judgment of a black man as to what stocks, mostly railroad and steamship companies, stocks to buy and sell. One of his customers was, who actually ends up suing him, was actually the librarian at the New York Society Library for 50 years who ended up, he had $1,000 which he invests with Hamilton, and an explanation of why hedge funds only deal with multimillionaires rather than small fry, because he kept on changing his mind. He's the sort of person, he's not a professional investor. He drives people nuts. And it was a long court case out of this. The other thing that Hamilton did was he would buy shares in a company, then sue the company and try to bring in a receiver to have all the assets of the company sold and redistributed to the shareholders themselves. So he does this with the Poughkeepsie Silk Company, and he does it with the Accessory Transit Company, which gets him into a pitched battle with Cornelius Vanderbilt. And when Cornelius Vanderbilt dies, there's a really interesting obituary which said that Cornelius Vanderbilt feared no one, but when it came to a stock market battle, there was one person he respected, and it was Jeremiah Hamilton. Doesn't mention that he's black, but he was.
Wall Street, it was the Wild West in terms of what you could do and what you could get away with. And Jeremiah Hamilton competed with whites and he beat them at their own game. He was as crooked as everyone else was on Wall Street. He wasn't a turn the other cheek type of person. If you hit him, he hit you and added 10% for interest. He retaliated. As a 20-year-old, he was in charge of basically running a cargo of counterfeit coin to Haiti. He first made money by over-insuring ships and then arranging to sink them and claiming the insurance money, or in playing very fast and loose with contracts. He could always talk the talk, so he's always borrowing money from someone else to pay off someone else, and he keeps it going and keeps it going. And suddenly in the middle 1830s, he becomes established. He bought heavily into real estate, but he bought about 2 weeks before the crash and got wiped out. Unlike many Americans who also went bankrupt in the 1837 panic, he actually came back and made money on Wall Street. was a millionaire at least by 1852. He's got a white wife. His best friends are white. But once he walked out of Wall Street, he wasn't even a second-class citizen. For most New Yorkers, he was just another black. So whether he liked it or not, the rules and laws of segregation applied to him. In 1863, in the draft riots, a mob went to his door on East 29th Street. But Hamilton was no idiot. He had actually scarfed over the back fence. He was discriminated against, but he overcame that and just rode roughshod over anyone who objected to him on racial grounds. Again, he didn't take a backward step. He went toe-to-toe with the first American tycoon. He really couldn't care less. He just spat in the face of elite white New Yorkers.
In the mid-1800s, Wall Street was completely white. As an African-American, Jeremiah G. Hamilton was not really honored. However, when he died in 1875, he captured the nation's attention when newspaper reports showed that he was the wealthiest non-white man in the entire country. His estate was worth $2 million, $250 million today. Hamilton worked in Wall Street for about 40 years. He was a very skilled financial manipulator. Unlike a majority of the black success stories where the manufacturers sold products to black consumers, Jeremiah Hamilton found his way in the New York business world. Although he was successful, he was not really liked. In some papers, his obituary was bitterly written and sprinkled with racial slurs. While he was alive, Hamilton did not care much about how people saw him. He went on amassing his wealth. Even with the situation, merchants and brokers cared more about his money than the color of his skin. Hamilton was born in 1807 in Virginia, Richmond, or the Caribbean. He changed his place of origin depending on who was asking. He first made history in 1828. He ran a cargo with counterfeit Haitian coin for an association of New York merchants. He fled when the cargo was discovered by Haitian authorities. When the news of this criminal enterprise broke, newspapers came out to condemn him. The editor of the first African-American newspaper, Freedom's Journal, cursed Hamilton for his action. Although the shrewd entrepreneur was under a lot of pressure to name names, he remained silent and never revealed his counterparts. At a very young age, Hamilton learned the ropes of Wall Street. 5 years after this scandal, he started focusing solely on New York. Here, he was known for over-insuring vessels. He would then arrange to have them destroyed, a business that proved to be lucrative. Marine insurance companies in New York made it public in 1827 that they would not insure a voyage that had anything to do with Hamilton. The United States experienced a real estate boom in 1838, and Hamilton saw this as an opportunity. He purchased 47 lots of land in the present-day Astoria. He also invested a lot in property in Poughkeepsie. Hoping that the boom would go on, he invested a total of $10 million, today's money. That was the worst business decision he ever made. He tried dodging his creditors, but at last, he declared bankruptcy, 1842. In 1860, Hamilton ran a pool, similar to a hedge fund. Investors pooled money and gave it to Hamilton so he would invest on their behalf. He was in charge of making decisions, such as which stocks were bought. In real sense, he was speculating by using other people's money. Investors were so eager to join this pool that they gave Hamilton gifts as a way to gain his favor. Hamilton became very successful and was Wall Street's first millionaire. What is impressive is that he succeeded at a time when Wall Street was overwhelmingly white. He was anything but timid. He was also good at what he did. Don Cheadle will portray Wall Street's first black millionaire in an upcoming movie.
Thousands of jobs for local people by Chinese investor shoe factory, Huajian Shoe Factory in Ethiopia. Since formal diplomatic ties forged between China and Ethiopia more than four decades ago, the overall relationship and cooperation between the two countries have grown steadily. Ethiopia has taken China as an example for its economic growth and development. In recent years, the partnership and economic cooperation between the two countries have brought about fruitful outcomes in different sectors, particularly in infrastructure and industrial parks development. The Eastern Industry Zone in the town of Dukam, Oromia Regional State, just 35 kilometers south of the capital Addis Ababa, is one of the mega projects carried out with the Chinese investment in the development of manufacturing sector in Ethiopia. The once farming town began to see a surge in manufacturing in 2010 when Ethiopia's first industrial park was opened here. The Eastern Industry Zone has housed about 85 factories with the Chinese investments and a shoe factory in the industry zone, that is, Huajian Shoe Factory, has enabled the country to bear fame on the world exporter map for its Made in Ethiopia shoes. I'm on the premises of the Eastern Industry Zone in Dukam Town, 35 kilometers south of Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa. This is the gate of Huajian Shoe Factory. Built with Chinese investment, the 40-hectare Eastern Industrial Zone is where Huajian, a Chinese shoemaker producing for brands like Guess, Calvin Klein, Nina, and other branded items, set up its factory in 2011. Huajian Shoe Factory, as the Eastern Industry Zone alone, has created job opportunities for about 2,500 local Ethiopians. This was followed by a second Huajian factory in August 2016 in the firm's own industrial park on the outskirts of the capital, Addis Ababa. You can see the picture of the new Huajian International Light Industry Zone being under construction in Addis Ababa. The Ethiopia-China Huajian International Light Industry City, invested and constructed by Huajian Group, is located in the Labu Lafto district of Addis Ababa, capital of Ethiopia. The functions include such as export processing, trade and service, among others. This integrated industrial park focuses on a light industry and its theme is science and technology, high efficiency, civilization, harmony, and environmental friendly. It is the leading area and a demonstration area among the African industrial parks of China's advanced and advantageous industry developing in Africa through One Belt, One Road strategy. The Huajian Light Industry City, projected with a total investment of $1 billion, covering a total area of 137.8 hectares with a construction area of 1.5 million square meters, is supposed to be completely constructed in 2020. We are now inside the Huajian Shoe Factory, and now I can see that this department is says research and design, and we have workers operating inside and inside. Here are both male and female workers engaged on their respective duties at this Huajian Shoe Factory on the premises of the Eastern Industrial Zone. The local workers and the Chinese all work here in harmony and in good spirit. Sewing, decorating, segregation, binding, polishing, giving final touch, checking, packing, the different activities carried out here at the different sections and each in its own steps.
This department is now evolving. Now we can see how the depression is made and processed inside this department. We see the workers are on duty and they are working hard. And we see also that the mold is over there. And we see the mold is here and the socks are on duty. I think we see also these shoes are the, I think, on the final stage. So this is one of the departments of the Hoijian shoe factory. Also we see the Chinese staff are working along with local staff. As you can see, this is a sewing machine, so workers are on duty. And the Chinese staff and local staff are working together in harmony. Yes, now this female worker also working on this, how to fill this half process to product. And it goes like that. This is the half process shoe factory. Now the worker is on duty. Now the worker is pairing the shoe which comes from the different sections. Now she is a kind of polishing it and to give to the final touch.
The slogans and messages within the facility of the shoe factory tend to encourage and create friendly and sound working atmosphere and spirit.
This very large working space of Hoijian shoe factory, we can see also the slogans that is focused on efficiency, effective work, long-term development and harmonious living are among the slogans in this shoe factory. Now we see the different sections are operating in processing the shoe being manufactured in this Hoijian shoe factory on the premises of the Eastern Industry Zone in Jikamtown.
In addition to creating job opportunities, Hoijian has enabled hundreds of local employees to get training opportunities towards enhancing their skills and career capabilities in shoe manufacturing sector. Apart from enhancing their skills and current career, the training in China is believed to help local employees be the future managers of Hoijian in their home country. To date, Hoijian has selected more than 500 Ethiopian employees for a training of 6 months to 2 years in China. Wendu Sanabara is one of the local employees who have had training opportunities in China.
My name is Wendusan Abara. My experience is I am already working in Hoijian more than 6 years. I am working in Hoijian is around 2011, starting Hoijian. 2013-2014, I am go to China for 2 year training. After that, come back to here. My position is now already. I am production assistant. Production manager assistant. Now my company is already making in female shoes, export for American market. Now my company is already the more than 2,500 workers in here.
We see here the final product of the shoe produced, manufactured here in Hoijian shoe factory of the Eastern Industry Zone. I see here the female worker is on duty of putting the shoes and finalize the package.
Who's the American?
Yeah. This is a worker in duty of finalizing the final stage of the shoe products. and they are packing. And can you tell us what are you doing here in the final stage?
Me, yes, ma, every day before.
Yeah, this is will be exported to foreign markets. Yeah, this is the final stage of the shoe factory. Yeah, okay. It says that made in Ethiopia, the shoe produced locally here in Ethiopia by Ethiopians in the Hojian shoe factory of the Chinese. These are the package of the final product of Hojian shoe factory. It says made in Ethiopia. Once the shoe products are produced, finalized and packaged, they will be loaded on these trucks and it will be exported to foreign markets.
Following China's experience, Ethiopia now plans to increase the number of its industrial parks to 15 by June 2018 as part of its effort to boost manufacturing and export. Within the framework of the Belt and Road Initiative, China has also built and financed a $4.2 billion Ethiopia-Djibouti electrified rail line to boost Ethiopia's industrial exports. For the Hojian case, it is an integration of China's technic advantage with Ethiopia's low-cost production advantage, achieving win-win cooperation.
Now we are leaving this room, which is a model of this project, that is Ethiopia-China Hojian International Light Industry Zone, which is underway in Labu, Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa.
We stand here today with a plant that's closing, but I'm extremely proud of the people that work in this plant here.
For a year and a half, I didn't have anything.
We lost our home, we lost a vehicle.
I have struggled to get back to middle class again.
This is a historic project that is going to help grow this community, give people jobs, and give a future to your kids and my kids.
Where you sit today used to be a General Motors plant, and now there are over 1,000 employees working here.
Is this a union shop?
It is our desire to not be.
We hope someday to get this good.
There have been 11 complaints filed. Some workers claim unsafe working conditions and unfair treatment.
Doing the same thing over and over again, that wears on your body and your soul.
压力是很大，确实是。说白了话，弄得呢，在这个地方。
They told me that they had to be here 2 years, away from their family, no extra pay. I made it their house, they made it my home. We've just bonded.
I'm a riser.
很佩服美国呢，还能上两班岗，不用像我们想象那样子去为了生活失去很多东西。
Now the whole world is watching.
Nothing in America has changed in terms of working people working hard. What changed in America was rich people deciding they wanted to rewrite the rules to take advantage of people.
You never give up on the American dream. To me, that would be un-American.
Thousands of jobs for local people by Chinese investor shoe factory, Hojian Shoe Factory in Ethiopia. Since formal diplomatic ties forged between China and Ethiopia, More than four decades ago, the overall relationship and cooperation between the two countries have grown steadily. Ethiopia has taken China as an example for its economic growth and development. In recent years, the partnership and economic cooperation between the two countries have brought about fruitful outcomes in different sectors, particularly in infrastructure and industrial parks development. The Eastern Industry Zone in the town of Dukem, Oromia Regional Estate, just 35 kilometers south of the capital Addis Ababa, is one of the mega projects carried out with the Chinese investment in the development of manufacturing sector in Ethiopia. The once farming town began to see a surge in manufacturing in 2010 when Ethiopia's first industrial park was opened here. The Eastern Industry Zone has housed about 85 factories with the Chinese investments and a shoe factory in the industry zone, that is, Hojian Shoe Factory, has enabled the country to be a fame on the world export map for its made in Ethiopia shoes. I'm on the premises of the Eastern Industry Zone in Dukem Town, 35 kilometers south of Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa. This is the gate of Hojian Shoe Factory. Built with Chinese investment, the 40-hectare Eastern Industrial Zone is where Hojian, a Chinese shoemaker producing for brands like Guess, Calvin Klein, Nina, and other branded items, set up its factory in 2011. Hojian Shoe Factory, as the Eastern Industry Zone alone, has created job opportunities for about 2,500 local Ethiopians. This was followed by a second Hojian factory in August 2016 in the firm's own industrial park on the outskirts of the capital, Addis Ababa. You can see the picture of the new Hojian International Light Industry Zone being under construction in Addis Ababa. The Ethiopia-China Hojian International Light Industry City, invested and constructed by Hojian Group, is located in the Labu Lafto district of Addis Ababa, capital of Ethiopia. The functions include such as export processing, trade and service, among others. This integrated industrial park focuses on a light industry and its theme is science and technology, high efficiency, civilization, harmony, and environmental friendly. It is the leading area and a demonstration area among the African industrial parks of China's advanced and advantageous industry developing in Africa through One Belt, One Road strategy. The Hojian Light Industry City, projected with a total investment of $1 billion, covering a total area of 137.8 hectares with a construction area of 1.5 million square meters, is supposed to be completely constructed in 2020. We are now inside the Hojian Shoe Factory, and now I can see that this department is says research and design, and we have workers operating inside and inside. Here are both male and female workers engaged on their respective duties at this Hojian Shoe Factory on the premises of the Eastern Industrial Zone. The local workers and the Chinese all work here in harmony and in good spirit. Soon, decorating, segregation, binding, polishing, giving final touch, checking, packing, the different activities carried out here at the different sections and each in its own steps. This department is now evolving. Now we can see how the decoration is made and processed inside this department. We see the workers are on duty and they are working hard. And we see also that the molders over there
And we see the molders here and the socks are on DT. I think we see also these shoes are the, I think, on the final stage. So this is one of the departments of the Hoijian shoe factory. Also we see the Chinese staff are working along with local staff. As you can see, this is a sewing machine, so workers are on duty. And the Chinese staff and local staff are working together in harmony. Yes, now this female worker also working on this, how to sew this half processed shoe product. And it goes like that. This is the half processed shoe factory. Now the worker is on duty. Now the worker is pairing the shoe which comes from the different sections. Now she is a kind of polishing it and to give to the final touch.
The slogans and messages within the facility of the shoe factory tend to encourage and create friendly and sound working atmosphere and spirit.
This very large work.
When you take jewelry self-defense, then you too can say, nobody bothers me, nobody bothers me. Call USA 1000. Jewelry means might for right.
Nobody buys me. Nobody buys me either.
Hi, my name's Azu. Welcome to Aikido Flow. And I'm here to basically explain to you, or basically answer the question, why I choose Aikido over any martial arts. Now, I want to stress, I'm not saying Aikido is the best martial arts in the world. There's aspects of it which are brilliant aspects of all martial arts. For me, all martial arts is brilliant. But for what I do, Aikido, I found, is the best martial arts. My day job, I work in a school teaching kids. Part-time, I do security in nightclubs. I've been doing that for about 15 years, and I've been in a lot of situations where I've used Aikido in real life. And the reason why it's best for me is because it gives me choice. Now, I'm not that young anymore, and it's nice to be able to do something without having to punch or kick all the time. I've been arrested twice on the job. And that's often been a result of me hitting somebody back in the days, and police come, they see blood, broken nose or whatever. Next minute I'm in cuffs, I'm being arrested. And that was just me acting in self-defense. But Aikido lately I found has given me a choice. Like, for example, sorry, Andre, can I borrow you please? Andre, for example,